The following podcast contains some strong language and may include spoilers. Listener discretion is advised. Hello everyone, welcome to the first episode of the Bugcast, named so because I am an egomaniac who names things after myself. I'm your host, Buggy.
I'm his ever so humble co-host, Chris.
And joining us today is our guest, Crimson King.
And I'm just happy to be here.
And today we are going to discuss one of anime's greatest conspiracy theories that the members of Smash Mouth wrote Kaon.
So just to explain how this podcast will work briefly, the plan at this point is to update monthly, bringing in a new guest each month and letting them choose a talking point. So if the podcast sucks, we get to pin the blame on them.
Wow. The whole weight of the world is on my shoulders now, man.
Don't think of it like that. Just think of it as that you're our scapegoat.
Oh, it's not the first time.
You can manage it. So let's start off with a little bit of an interview so that our good listeners, all, you know, two of them, know who exactly Crimson is. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I guess there's not much that's that exciting about me. I was born in October, so that's cool. Halloween's great. I like cartoons of all sorts and professional wrestling. I don't know anything in particular. I feel like I had something written down, but I don't know where it went.
So basically, you're just some guy.
Yeah, I'm kind of boring. I don't do a whole lot.
Yeah. The reason I've decided to bring Crimson in for the first podcast is because he's actually someone that I've known online for a long time now. I think it's been like about a decade that we've known each other.
Too goddamn long, it's how long it's been.
Yeah. So I figured, hey, I need a guest for the first episode, why not bring in, you know, my longest internet friend? So, you watch anime, I believe, correct?
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes. So, what are five of your favorite anime? Don't have to be in any sort of order. They don't have to be, you know, your five favorite, just five of your favorites, to give us a sense of what sort of shows you like.
Fooly Cooly is the best anime ever made. Welcome to the NHK is up there somewhere. Kaon, of course, is there somewhere. Oh, let's see what else. Akira, though that's a film, and I'm not really sure if it counts, but I mean,
yeah, it counts.
Yeah, why not? It's great.
If it's animated in Japan, it counts.
And I feel like I have to say Cowboy Bebop, or otherwise I'm, you know, wrong.
Yeah, but that's fair.
But fuck that, I'm gonna go with Samurai Champloo instead.
Alright. Good choices, and I think that they'll all sort of lend themselves to the discussion topic that you chose as well. So, on the flip side, give us three anime that you just absolutely hate.
Alright, this is where we're going to have some fun, because I've been thinking about this a while. Yesterday on my Facebook, a friend of mine posted a video of two white dudes, which, I mean, we're all white, but two white dudes reacting to the ending of Angel Beats. And I'm just going to assume that everyone's seen the ending of Angel Beats. They have, right?
I have.
I have. But for our listeners, if you have not seen the ending of Angel Beats, I'm assuming spoilers are going to be following.
Yeah, they're probably going to be following. So these kids are, like, crying at the end of it, right? Because this girl fucking disappears. And they just... they just start bawling as soon as she's gone. And I'm like, of course, everyone cries the first time they see it. It's emotionally moving. But let me tell you about watching it the second time, when it's the most horribly paced, badly put together piece of shit I've ever seen.
Actually, there is an explanation for that.
Is there?
It was originally intended to be too core, but at the last minute they were forced to cut it down.
See, that makes sense. It probably would have been better if it were too core.
It probably would have.
Yes.
But as it is, it's a steaming hot pile of garbage, and that's unfortunate, because the first time watching, it's breathtaking and amazing. But on any critical evaluation level, it becomes garbage. So that's number one. Number two is Nisei Koi. Which, don't get me wrong, I love the manga, but I hate the anime. And the only reason I hate the anime is because I watched it after reading the manga, and I already know what's going to happen, and I'm just putting myself through hell a second time.
By which you mean you already know what's not going to happen.
Yeah, exactly. And the third one, is it too cliche to say Naruto?
No.
I don't even hate Naruto, I just dislike it. I like some of the things it does. I think it's got some really cool powers and shit. But, you know, it's Naruto, so what can you do? I kind of just hate it.
Right. Yeah, I do think it sort of fell apart at the halfway point, maybe even at the one-third point. I mean, at the beginning, it has some grade-A shonen material, but then
yeah,
I don't know what the hell happened.
I still think the Zabuza arc is some of the best anime I've ever seen.
Zabuza, even the Rescue Sasuke arc, despite how much I fucking hate Sasuke, fantastic stuff.
I guess I haven't watched that far into it.
Yeah, I mean, I believe you said even Naruto, you know, he's not likable a lot of people, but you can kind of see where he's coming from.
Absolutely. I mean, it's not horrible, it's just, it's the shonen trap, I guess.
Alright, so then, do you have any real preferences in terms of genre, or not really?
I don't know, man. Not really.
Okay.
I like slice of life, I guess, but not that much.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything that you've been watching lately that you've been enjoying?
I watched 8 episodes of Samurai Flamenco and then forgot to log back into Netflix and forgot to watch the rest of it. Started watching One Punch Man, but got 3 episodes in and forgot to keep watching. So, yes and no.
So, and then I guess, just briefly, since this is being recorded in December, even though it's going to be put out in January, we're having, you know, finally everything from the year is ending, except, of course, for a few shows that are going on into next year. Do you have a favorite anime from this year?
Oh, from this whole year?
Yeah.
Shit, what? What did I even finish that aired this year? You know, the thing is, I mostly watched old stuff and read manga this year. There was season 2 of Yahari Ore no Seishin Love Comedy Wa Machigaba Ragagara blah blah blah, which was pretty good.
Alright.
Oh, I remember. I finished Is It Wrong to Pick Up Girls in a Dungeon, and let me tell you, that was the highlight of my year.
In a good way?
No. It was bad.
Okay, that show was really bad. But it's still, like, your favorite anime of the year because you didn't really watch anything else?
No, it was bad. What is this show I watched? Oh, that's not from this year. You know, I'm going to say One Punch Man because it's fucking great, despite of only watching 3 episodes of it. I just didn't watch a whole lot this year.
All right, and that's fair.
I read a lot more than I watched. Little Witch Academia 2 was great, but maybe that was last year.
No, I think that was this year.
Yeah, it was this year. It was really good.
All right, so with that, should we just move straight on to the main topic of discussion?
Which is the conspiracy theory that the writers of Smash Mouth wrote K-On.
Is that really what it is?
I've never heard that one.
Wasn't that what we're talking about?
What are you smoking?
That's not what we're talking about, is it?
No.
God damn it! 10 pages of writing just down the drain!
So, Crimson, remind us again, remind us and also explain to the listeners for the first time what the topic that was that you proposed to us.
I suggested that we talk about music in anime because, you know, people talk a lot about great soundtracks. But what about shows that are about music and that sort of thing? But, you know, let's talk about music and how great music can make great anime even more great.
Mm-hmm. And do you wanna start with, you know, how music is used within shows and soundtracks first, or do you wanna start with shows where, you know, the making of music is actually part of the plot?
I don't really have a strong preference, I guess.
All right, then let's start with the latter.
Okay.
You want to go into K-On! A bit, because I've actually never seen it.
Neither have I.
See, that's a real shame. K-On!'s something special that, you know, I understand why some people don't like it, but for me, like, there's never been anything quite like that show that I've ever seen again. The feeling of just, it's life, and sometimes it's hard, and sometimes it's silly and easy. Oh man, I don't even know how to describe it. The music, you know, is more background than anything. People talk about, like, Cowboy Bebop having great music as a background, but what if music is, like, actually the background? That doesn't make any sense. But, the music in K-On! Is more than just what the sounds are while other things are happening. It's the reason why everything is happening. If not for music, these, 4 or 5 girls later on never would have met or, started making music, and none of the show would have happened. So music, as far as K-On! Is concerned, is really something special.
Yeah. I think I get what you're talking about with that.
I hope so, because I'm not sure I do.
Yeah, no, it's basically, you know, the music is there and it's important, but it's not really what the show is about. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, definitely, I think that sums it up well.
And I think that that's the same thing with a lot of these, you know, music-based shows. Just this past year, actually, we've had 2 of them, one which started in 2014, but which ended this season, or this year, and then another one which began and ended, at least the first season, this year. And those are Shigatsu wa Kimi no Uso, or Your Lie in April, and Hibike Euphonium, or Sound Euphonium.
Or actually, as it's written, it's Sound Euphonium!
Yeah, it's got Sound. That exclamation mark. So Sound!
Hibike, yeah. Loudly, Euphonium.
Did you see Your Lie in April? Did you watch that?
I did. Both Chris and I have watched that.
Well, I watched most of it.
How was it?
I personally thought that it was really good. It's one that has been a little divisive because it's, you know, it's sort of a melodrama.
Yeah.
And some people really don't like melodrama.
Yeah, melodramas have to follow a certain formula that can really put people off, and I think that's understandable.
It's comedic timing's terrible.
I think, though, the thing that I appreciated most about Kimi no Uso was how music was used in it. for those who don't know, the premise of the series is that there's this pianist who was, he was like this child prodigy, only he was playing to impress his ailing mother. Like, his mother was trying to live through him. And then
she went Mommy Dearest on his ass.
Yeah, so that left him with all sorts of psychological issues, and it ended up getting to the point where, like, he had this psychosomatic thing going on where he would start playing and then he wouldn't be able to hear the piano anymore. He couldn't hear the music as he was playing it. So he kind of lost his ability to play the piano. Well, anyway, what happens is he comes across this girl who, she plays violin, and she plays it, like, she plays in the same situations that he played piano. She plays, you know, like, concert violin, where you're being judged on performance, and it's very by-the-book sort of thing. This is a girl who gives no shits about how exactly the composer intended you to play it. She puts her own spin on things. She's pretty cute.
All right, I'll watch it.
Your typical anime blonde.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll watch it. That's all I care about.
Yeah. But the thing is, her first introduction is just... It struck me. It struck me in a very big way. Because she's sitting up there and she's playing a piece, and you're seeing everyone react to the piece. And it's like her second scene, but it tells you so much more about the character than anything that came beforehand did. So, and I think the way that music is used within that series, you see a lot of people, you know, monologuing over music and sort of explaining themselves and who they are through the music. And it's really used as character development, just the songs that they choose, the, you know, the way that they play. You really start to learn a lot through the different characters through that. And I think that that's something that music can definitely add to a show.
There's
also very unique opening, I guess you could say. I don't know. The opening stands out to me. At first, I didn't like it because I feel that an anime involving a piano and a violin shouldn't have a fucking Casio involved. But, I don't know, as I listen to it, it's just the melody, just how all the voices mend. Goose House is a very different group. And it works for this show.
See, I don't even remember the opening off the top of my head.
I guess, you know, that's another interesting thing. Anime openings, you know, sometimes they'll stick to you in a way that Tank from Cowboy Bebop does, or what's another good example?
I want to say, well, we know how big an effect Attack on Titan's opening had.
Yeah, things like that, where openings just stick with people. And that can be important in music, too.
Yeah, but that's like a whole nother topic. We could
have a whole nother podcast on.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
what about a loud word euphonium? Or whatever we're calling it now.
Well,
I watched the first episode of that. Like everything after the summer of 2013, I don't watch anything more than the first couple of episodes of anything.
I think that with Hibike Euphonium, that was like if in K-On! The music was there as a background for, you know, as this underlying connecting factor that brought these characters together through their, you know, relationships with each other. And Kimi no Uso, music was used to sort of explain, you know, who exactly these characters were. I think with Hibike Euphonium, what it really did with music was sort of show their motivations. like their motivations and who they wanted to be, what they were trying to aspire to, and how they wanted to better themselves. That's what it was really about, I think.
So it's the driving force rather than the connecting force.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Well, there's some connection factors in there.
Oh, of course.
Well, yeah, but it's much more, this is directly why these characters are relating to each other, rather than this is something that these... It's the sole reason that these characters are sort of brought together, rather than just this thing in their lives that does bring them together. Because it is a much more competitive sort of show.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Kiyoami did a fantastic job with this show, by the way. I want to say it's my second or third best show of the year.
Yeah, it's up there for me as well. On reflection, I think there's a lot of it that wasn't particularly memorable. Like, I initially gave it, you know, my highest rating after it came out, but now I'm considering knocking it down one, just because it hasn't quite stuck with me the way that other shows do. But
really?
It's gonna lose a star.
Oh, no. But yeah, it's... The thing is, it's something that is very technically, you know, fantastic.
Sure.
You know, the direction, the sound, the animation, they are all absolutely beautiful. And it's a joy to watch and take in. And, you know, you get the sense of who these characters are and what they want. There's just something about it that doesn't really stick with me that well.
Oh, I mean, it really stuck with me. I mean, well, partly because my girlfriend is a flute major, so she basically gave me the in-and-outs and everything. And, I don't know, there's just this, like, the one moment, I think it was in episode 9 or 10, just that one moment where it seemed like she was going to be kicked out of her little group for the big performance. And it's that scene where she's just running through the night, just telling herself, I'm going to get better, I'm going to get better, I can do this, I'm going to get better. That moment is just one of those things where I just think to myself, this is why I watch anime.
Yeah, and you brought that up when it was airing.
Yeah.
And I definitely agree, that's a scene that really sticks with me from it. And there are these scenes from it that stick with me. It's just a very beautiful show. But yeah, a lot of that, a lot of the storytelling there is done through music. It shows the more competitive side of music. And it shows, like, okay, K-On! Is what it's like to be a band. Kimi no Uso is what it's like to be a performer. Sound Euphonium is what it's like to really train yourself within a group and to, you know, sort of be thrown together with these people from, by circumstance. They're not a band, they're a team, essentially. I mean, it's essentially a sports anime in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, you're clashing with everyone who has different motives and all that.
Let me talk about another anime, then. You guys ever seen Detroit Metal City?
First couple episodes.
Is that the one with the kiss-looking motherfuckers?
Yeah. Yeah.
I have not seen it, but I've seen clips of it.
You should probably watch it. Because... So it's interesting. 11 minutes each episode, one core. Basically each episode divided up into two or three mini-episodes where they kind of go with one joke. And it features some of the most amusing situations possible. And most of them right off the fact that this dude has to protect his identity as a heavy metal singer from everyone else in his life who has no idea that he does this sort of thing. So, at one point, in order to protect this girl he's with, he has to dress up as his heavy metal persona, alter ego, and keep his fans from, like, basically killing her, because his fans are rabid. These are like, Slayer fans, you know? So he's trying to keep these fans from killing this girl, and to do this, he basically has to, like, grab her and dry hump her in the middle of a record store to keep her from doing this. And all of this is, like, underscored by situations where he plays concerts and does the heavy metal lifestyle thing. He just tries to juggle two different personalities, and it's not anything particularly special in that regard, but the subject material and the music's also just really good. Like, K-On, you know, the music's alright, but it's kind of light and fluffy, if I might make that joke that neither of you will get.
Fua Fua Tea Time?
Or something. Oh, you got it. No. Almost.
So, almost. I'm familiar enough with the series to kind of get the idea.
Yeah. But Detroit Metal City is brutal, man. And it's a great example of music really making an anime work. The show could never work if it wasn't backed up by actual heavy metal music.
Yeah. From what I've seen of, like, clips of Detroit Metal City, it strikes me as, it seems like it'd be a bit like, is Death Clock the name of the show, or is that just the band within it?
The band within it, you're thinking Metalocalypse.
Yeah, Metalocalypse.
Also a great show, probably my favorite Western cartoon.
Is there any sort of similarity between those two shows?
There's definite similarity, especially in how fans act. They're either rabid or idiots. Usually both. But, the characters are different enough in Metalocalypse. They're all just larger-than-life people who are all kind of idiots who hate their fans and want to be left alone. And Metalocalypse, the humor comes from kind of this awkwardness that surrounds all of them, whereas in Detroit Metal City, it's these stupid situations he ends up getting into. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. All right, I'll check it out.
And it's short, you know, like 11 minutes... 12 episodes. That's the length of Fooly Cooly.
Yeah. So, from there, how about we move on to shows that have, you know, just absolutely great soundtracks. And before we start talking about shows like that itself, I wanna ask you guys a question. What do you guys think makes a soundtrack great rather than just good?
It needs to flow with the show. It's like one of those things where if you took out all the dialogue, it would still be worth watching because the soundtrack just keeps it going. The best, that good example of that being Dot Havoc Sign. Show script is garbage. But if you just take that out, put in the soundtrack, it's just like, it actually makes it better.
You know, I never watched Dot Havoc Sign. Except for, like, the first 5 episodes of the first time it was on Toonami, like, 10 years ago.
That's when I watched it.
Man, that was some good times back when Toonami was young.
That's another subject for another day.
No kidding. You can talk about dubs and shit.
Yeah, that's... We're just bringing up all sorts of topics we can use in the future.
I'm adding them to the list.
Anyway, to me, I feel like to have a really great soundtrack, it really, the soundtrack has to add something to the series in a important way, whether it's, you know, through tone or whether it's able to actually tell a story. And I think that, you know, one of the signs of these soundtracks is you're going to listen to it and, like, after the show's over, just off the top of your head, you're going to have these songs stuck in your head, and you're going to have them associated with these different scenes. Like, let me give you an example. Two different shows scored by Hiroyuki Sawano. I might be pronouncing that wrong, but anyway, on one hand you have Kill la Kill. You know, say what you want about the show, I thought it had, you know, I know it's a divisive show, but I thought it had an absolutely fantastic soundtrack. On the other hand, take Auld Noa Zero.
Wasn't that show really bad?
Say, some people think it's good. Those people are wrong. But again, say what you want about the show. I feel like it had, you know, a good soundtrack. The thing is, I don't think it had a great soundtrack. And the thing is, you know, I could give you a couple examples of songs, and I could look at you and be like, okay, so when in the show is this used? And with Auld Noa Zero, I'm pretty sure that all you'd be able to do is point to the, oh yeah, that's the, you know, I say cry part. And you're like, yeah, I remember when that happens.
That happened in episode three.
When, yeah. Because it was, you know, a very memorable moment and the music fit well. But on the, I don't feel.
Because that was the episode written by Gen Urobuchi.
Yeah. But.
Oh, Earl Butcher.
Then on the flip, I don't really think that you can point to any other songs and be like, I remember exactly when in the show this is being used. Now, on the other hand, with Kill la Kill, the don't lose your way parts, you know when those show up, right?
Yes.
Wait, don't lose your way? I thought that was a Kingdom Hearts thing.
No, that's, I mean, there might be, but,
man,
like,
have you
seen Kill la Kill at all?
Kids these days with their new animes and their Kill la Kills. No, I've seen, like, once again, the first three episodes, and then forget to watch, you know?
I'll run this experiment with Chris, then. So, like, you know when Don't Lose Your Way pops up, right?
Yes.
You know, the what's the name of the song? I Want to Know. The You're Alone in the Rain one.
Yes.
You know when that pops up.
I know when Ping Pong Circulation pops up.
Ping Pong Circulation. That's another one I was going to bring up.
I know when Sangayama's theme pops up, and it's not related to Sangayama.
You know, I have very specific memories in my mind of when Sasuke's theme pops up. It's there are all these really memorable songs that you associate with the characters because they say something and they're used in a really good good way. And again, same composer, similar sort of sounding soundtracks, but you know, again, very idiosyncratic ways of, you know, naming songs.
Oh, yeah, by the way, for anyone listening, Ping Pong Circulate is not the actual name. All the names for Kill la Kill's soundtrack are utter gibberish.
Not all of them.
Are you sure you're just not saying they're utter gibberish because they're in Japanese?
No. Combination of Japanese writing, English letters, and numbers.
Oh.
And I'm pretty sure that there are, like, you know, at symbols in there on occasion.
Yeah. And symbols that probably aren't even on your keyboard.
You know, all this talk about music makes me realize that you guys don't get it, you know?
Oh.
You're missing the one important thing, and that's the fact that when music is good, it just reaches out and touches you, man. That's what makes a soundtrack memorable.
Yeah.
Nah, delete that. I don't know what I'm talking
about. No. I can segue this into something else. Don't worry. Sometimes it touches you and it's memorable. Sometimes, if the soundtrack is awful, it's a bad touch.
Oh,
Parasite,
shit.
I'm looking at you.
The Bad Touch. By the Bloodhound Gang.
That's right. Parasite did have a distinctly odd soundtrack, didn't it?
I mean, I'm giving it a little leeway because this is his first gig ever with making an anime soundtrack, so I'm giving him a little leeway, but yeah.
So, let's move into sort of some shows that we think have, you know, really strong soundtracks, these soundtracks that are really particularly memorable. And I think there's no way of getting around it, because this is one that that Crimson suggested and that Chris and I both watched for the sake of talking about it on this show, since it is such a short show, and that's Fooly Cooly.
The only anime I've seen 6 times.
Oh, where do you even begin with a show like that? I think most of us probably saw it for the first time on Adult Swim.
I didn't,
actually.
Really?
Really.
I remember watching it when it first aired, then coming to school on Monday with all my other friends. What the fuck did I just watch?
Yeah, I mean, I can see why you'd say that. But, when did I watch? I think I watched it, the summer I got into anime, which would have been summer of 2012, maybe. And I think it was on Netflix at the time, and I watched it there.
Hmm. Did you watch it dubbed or subbed?
Sub, bro.
Huh.
I don't watch the dubs.
I've always watched it dubbed.
So,
this is awkward.
Well, partly because I tip my hat to anyone who can make a Crystal Pepsi reference.
What?
Well, again, this is also a subject for another day. The script for FLCL Fooly Cooly had to be localized because there were so many references that no one was going to get.
Yeah.
And one of them was referencing a soda that went out of production in Japan, and they changed that to Crystal Pepsi because another well-known soda that went out of production.
Right, okay.
So, yeah. I just finished watching it for just the second time today.
How was it?
And, well, let me tell you. The first time I watched it, I didn't really like it.
Oh, you're wrong.
Yeah, and now I've come to the conclusion that I am wrong. Like, near the end, I was saying, I don't get why I like this, but I like this. And I think the real thing with Fooly Cooly, like, I came to the conclusion that, oh, part of why I'm enjoying this so much is because the music. It just adds so much to the atmosphere and to the tone of the show that it makes it fantastic.
You know what it is, the music about Fooly Cooly?
What about it?
It perfectly fits with all the themes of the show. Like, the theme is essentially a story about growing up and wanting to be grown up and realizing it's okay to not grow up. And the Pillows are kind of like this alt-rock band. They have that kind of same sound.
Yeah.
And it fits incredibly, because when you're growing up and trying to decide if you're growing up or not, alt rock is kind of that feeling, you know, grunge and the post grunge, like Everclear, shit like that.
It's kind
of halfway between youthful and sad. And the music fits the sound of the music. I don't understand the words and what the Pillars are saying, but the sound, the way the music sounds, the genre stylings, I guess you would say. That's what fits with the rest of the show.
It's ironic you don't understand it, since so much of it is in English.
Well, as the creator of the director of Fooly Cooly said himself, comprehension should not be an important factor of FLCL.
No. Nope. Yeah.
But, yeah, I think I'd describe the music as nostalgic, almost, in some ways.
Yep, that would be correct.
It's, you know, it feels like just kicking back in summertime and just being a kid. That's yeah. What so much of it, you know, sounds like. And, like, even the lyrics, I noticed, because I wanted to look up the lyrics for, Little Busters, the song that shows up at the end of most of the episodes, and it's, with the kids, sing out the future. Maybe kids don't need their masters. We're just waiting for the little busters. It's like, yeah, or something. And I don't quite understand what it means, but I feel like it's supposed to be saying something about, like, hey, you know, be a rebellious kid who don't need no adult.
You know, it's saying go to Chuck E. Cheese's, where a kid can be a kid. This episode brought to you by Chuck E. Cheese's.
I, too, watched a lot of PBS when I was young.
Yeah?
but also, the choice to pick the Pillows to do the soundtrack, that was revolutionary in its own right, because until then, having an entire band to provide your soundtrack, I've... pretty sure it was one of the first to do that.
I can't think of any others. But then again, Fooly Cooly came out in what? 2002?
I think it was 2001, 2002, somewhere around.
Yeah, so what happened before that? Evangelion and... what's the show about the giant spaceships?
Oh, that narrows it down.
yeah. Real descriptive. I mean, before 2000, I mean, after 2000 was really an explosion of anime. We don't remember a lot of the stuff from before 2000. Cowboy Bebop was in 99. Evangelion was a few years before that.
We did have Black Heaven in 99. That might be the one you're thinking of.
Nah, it's like a real old school anime. But it doesn't matter. I was trying to make a joke.
Gunbuster?
No, like, way, like, 80s, you know?
Astro Boy?
Never mind, fuck it.
Rex Morgan, M.D.?
Seinfeld? Seinfeld is actually my favorite anime, I lied to you guys.
So, before we get too far off topic, what are some of the other shows you think have these really great, iconic soundtracks? Or the soundtracks that really add to the show?
I mean, I guess we gotta start with Cowboy Bebop.
Not surprised at all that that's the first one coming up.
There's no way you can get around it, dude. Like, my favorite episode of Cowboy Bebop is Mushroom Samba, and a large part of it is because when the three different bounty hunters are chasing after one person and after each other, and all Ed wants to do is get some food so he can... She? Is it a she?
It's a she.
God, I can never remember. All Ed wants to do is get some food to feed her friends. And you got this, like... You can only describe it as a... God, how would you describe it? I imagine the singer of the song being this big black lady, like a soul singer almost, and she's just screaming mushroom hunting over and over again as they're, like, I think they're on a train, like running over the top of a train or something, and it's just glorious and wonderful, and that episode sticks with me, and it's, Cowboy Bebop's something special as far as music goes.
Yeah, and I think, like, I've never been a huge fan of Cowboy Bebop. I need to rewatch it and give it, you know, also sort of the attention it deserves. I didn't really give it that the first time I watched it. But I think I was also kind of down on it going into it because I know that the music is such a big part of it, and I know that it's jazz music, and jazz music isn't actually, you know, I'm not a huge fan of jazz, really.
I don't understand that.
I don't either. It's not bad. There are some jazz songs that I love. I love Tank. I love the opening for Bacchano, that Guns N' Roses song. Mm-hmm. It's like there is jazz that I do like. I haven't listened to a lot of it, but it's just something that, you know, it's not my favorite genre.
Man, speaking of which, can we quickly just mention Bacchano and how well a Japanese TV series pick music that so well accentuates the feelings of 1930s America?
Yes.
Like, perfectly.
They did a great job.
I don't think the music is like a huge part of Bakugo, the same way that it is of Cowboy Bebop, but the way it fits so perfectly and doesn't get in the way, but doesn't really draw itself to you in any way, but fits perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that that deserves mention.
Well, yeah. Cowboy Bebop, Shinichiro Watanabe always seems to have a thing for making sure that his soundtracks work great with his shows.
Mm-hmm.
Hence why he usually works together with Yoko Kanno, and there's also Samurai Champloo.
Which is great.
Yeah. Rest in peace, Nujabes.
Oh, no kidding.
For me, there are really two soundtracks we haven't touched on that stick in my mind. The first one I'm going to try to spend less time on, but the soundtrack for Puella Magi Madoka Magica. I feel like it's got sort of this Gaelic-sounding soundtrack, and I think that it fits the show really well because it's, you know, it can be what it needs to be, but, like, when it needs to be triumphant, it can be triumphant. But when it has sort of this somber, melancholy tone to it, and that's really the first indication that you get that this show is going to be more than just a generic light and happy magical girl show. It's, you know from the first episodes, partially just because of the music, that it's going to be, you know, more serious than it first seems. The other one, and one that I'd like to go into a little more depth on, is the soundtrack for Tengentapa Gurren Lagann.
There we go. Let's talk about this one. Let's do it. I'm ready.
I think that Gurren Lagann has one of my favorite soundtracks of all time.
I think it pumps you up like nothing else, dude.
Yeah.
When you're going to watch Gurren Lagann, you're ready for some high-flying bullshit.
Yeah, and the song that they use in... I believe it's the previously on while they're setting things up, is No Helping It. And it's, you know, just this really driving, just hype song. It starts out with, you know, this low beat. It's like, dum, 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 dum. And then it comes in with the horns. It's da, ba, da, 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 da. All the while you've got this narrator just narrating in a deep voice above it, and it's like, yes, this is what I signed on for. I'm getting into this right now. Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. It, like I said, it pumps you up and gets you ready.
Yeah. Another thing I really want to mention in terms of that is it's two different songs. It's like Pierce the Heavens with Your XXX. It's like on the soundtrack, it's three X's.
Oh my.
I think it's meant to stand for drill or something. It's
no,
just
it stands for dick.
Well, I mean, they're pretty much the same thing.
They're saying Pierce the Heavens with Your Porn.
Anyway, there's...
This makes sense.
There's this one part in the, in the background. It has these... arpeggios? Is that the word I'm looking for? I don't know musical terms near as well as I should.
Yeah, I don't know shit about music.
You know, in the background you can hear this noise. And it sounds kind of like someone took the sound of a drill and turned it into something beautiful. And that's really the it's what the show is about. It's all centered around the idea of a drill. And that drill being used as a metaphor for a double helix. And yeah, piercing the heavens, you know, continuously moving forward and evolving and aspiring to greater heights. Because I mean, a drill, basically what it's made for is at the tip, it starts small. and as you turn it, it starts, you know, moving more and more forward, because it's, I mean, like anyone who's seen the show
Yeah, we know what drills look like. Don't worry about it.
Anyone who's seen the show and has heard, you know, Simon's huge speech at the end about, like, that's how a drill works, they know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, we know how drills work, man.
Yeah. And that's just really, you know, it's encompassed really well by the music. There's also the, like, the music that plays when they first break through out into the surface.
Sure.
It's just this really soaring type of melody. And that's a scene that has always stuck in my mind. Just, they break out, and they see the world just spinning around them for the first time, spread out, this whole open space. These are people who have known nothing but underground their entire lives. And suddenly they have this concept of the sky, this concept that you can go anywhere, that you're not to have things pinning you down.
That's just nuts. You think about, they just saw the sky for the first time. How did they not go crazy?
There's a really good short story about that I've read.
Yeah?
But that's neither here nor there.
That's a topic for another podcast.
Yeah, topic about, you know, a literary podcast or something. It's called Going Harvey in the Big House. If you're interested, look it up. It's about, you know, this futuristic world where people see the sky for the first time. But back to Gurren Lagann, it's just such an expansive soundtrack. It does so many different things with its music. And during, you know, the biggest moments in the series, you know, you can think back to the music that's playing and being like, that is beautiful. That's fantastic. So do you guys have anything more on that?
On Gurren Lagann in particular?
No, just on soundtracks in general.
You know what show does a surprisingly good job and has no business doing such a good job? Inferno Cop. The fucking music is, if I remember it correctly, just almost a constant guitar riff.
I don't remember it well enough. I'll have to check it out after this podcast.
I should really watch Inferno Cop again, because it's easy enough to watch, and I've only seen it 3 times, so...
Yeah. You should. You should watch Ninja Slayer as well.
I should.
Yeah!
The same people, right? The same horrible, horrible people. When
it's
are we
like,
getting Inferno Cop 2?
Next year, I think.
God, no kidding.
The thing with Ninja Slayer, it's not so much that they're like, we're going to make another Inferno Cop. It's more like, okay, we're going to take inspiration from Inferno Cop as we make this. What we are going to do is we have this masterpiece on our hands, guys, okay? And what we're going to do is we are going, you know, it's primarily an action show, but what I think we should do is make it so that the action parts of the show are animated way worse than everything else, like noticeably worse. And right, everyone in the room was just like, yeah, that's brilliant. It's basically Trigger trolling the fuck out of everyone, and it's beautiful, because there's a pretty decent show beneath all of that.
You know, I like anime.
Yeah. As do we.
It's pretty alright. Most of it's bad, but some of it's alright.
What else have we got? Girls in Panzer.
Girls in Panzer?
In the episode where they fight the Russians, and the Russians sing some Soviet propaganda music, basically. Brilliant. Not even actually Soviet propaganda music, it's actually a song about a girl whose boyfriend left to go fight on the front lines of World War II. God, that was so great, because they're just driving their tanks over this snowy abyss and singing the song, and it didn't matter at all. They're not sad. They're little girls fighting tanks in a school competition.
I have not seen that far into the show, but you're painting a pretty good picture.
It's worth watching. It's a good show. God damn, it's a good show.
It's on my backlog.
Watch it.
I will.
What else do we got?
I don't know. Should we wrap up the soundtrack portion?
Yeah, maybe. We should talk about Angel Beats real quick. I think it has a good enough soundtrack that it bears mentioning. But, I don't remember why. And that's probably just because I hate Angel Beats so much. But I remember the music in it being absolutely beautiful. Just stunningly beautiful. But, like you were saying earlier, right? I don't remember associating any of the music with anything else in it. So maybe it's all garbage.
All right, another segment that we are going to try to have on the podcast is a top five, by which, and when I say top five, I don't actually mean a top five. These are going to be in, you know, no particular order. And what I want to do this season is give you my five sort of favorite underrated shows of 2015. These are shows that maybe didn't get the attention that they deserved, but that I think are you know, at least worth a look. You know, because everyone's talking about, you know, Hibike Euphonium and One Punch Man. Nobody needs to talk more about them.
Yeah, we do.
Well, okay, we do. But these guys deserve their time in the limelight as well. So,
all right, give me number five.
Number five, I'm going to start with Peeping Life TV Season 1.
I don't know what you see in that show, man.
Did I watch part of that?
I don't know. It's, and like, I can understand why people wouldn't get into this one. I really can. But let me try to explain the show a little bit. Okay. So, imagine that there are, you know, some comedians sitting in a room, and they're like, hey, let's write these comedy sketches based around, you know, either just sort of these characters or, you know, we'll do improv with just regular characters, or we'll do some improv as these various old-timey anime characters, like Astro Boy, Blackjack, you know, what's the other one, like Yatterman, and they're like, okay, let's do that, let's do these improv sketches, let's act them out, and then let's rotoscope them and turn them into an anime. And that's essentially what Peeping Life is. It's something that sounds very natural in terms of dialogue and in terms of movement, because it's, you know, like actual dialogue and actual, you know, it's rotoscoped. So these are, it's like watching a TV show almost, and it may not be your thing because you really have to, first of all, be okay with rotoscoping in order to, you know,
that I'm chill with.
Yeah. Some people aren't, because some people are stupid idiots. But then it also has to be,
look, all I'm saying
really
is
your
that
style of humor.
All I'm saying is that Aku no Hana did not seem right rotoscoped, and I need to give that shit a second try. Just because I love the manga so much.
Let's move on to number four. Jinketsu no Maria, a.k.a. Maria the Virgin Witch. Now, as you might have guessed, this is an anime about a witch who is named Maria and who is a virgin.
And it's surprisingly not ecchi.
Yeah, surprisingly.
I didn't watch this.
No. Basically, the concept of the show is it takes place, I'm not sure quite when, but, you know, England and France are fighting, as they are wont to do. But you're a history guy. Well, you know that England and France like to fight.
Yep.
They don't anymore.
Well, not anymore, but this was set back when they did. So, Maria's basically like, why do you guys keep fighting on my doorstep? I don't like fighting. I'm going to use my magic powers to try to stop this war.
So she's a witch.
Yeah. And,
well, if I know anything about France, it's that they burned way more witches than any other country.
Yep, and so basically she ends up getting in a lot of trouble with the church and with, you know, the hierarchy themselves. Like the actual angels and such. Because, you know, she's a blasphemer, and it's a really interesting sort of look at religion and morality, and is religion inherently good or inherently bad, or somewhere in the middle? I thought that it was, you know, pretty good overall.
She's a very strong female character, which is something we seem to lack in a lot of anime.
Yeah, that's true.
You were just asking for me to start tipping my fedora, aren't you?
Moving on to number three.
That was pretty good, bro.
That was good. We have to...
5 out of 5.
We have to give that credit. Number 3. Binan Koko Chikyu Boy Boo Love, a.k.a. Cute High Earth Defense Club Love. Or just Boy Boo for short.
Man, this sounds wonderful. Why haven't I heard of this? Oh, God, it's all men.
Yep.
They're all men. Okay, that's why I haven't heard of it. Move on to number 2.
So, Boy Boo is basically... It's a Maho Shoujo show, only...
They're
instead
all
of
men.
Being,
it's Maho
yeah, they're
Shonen.
All guys. It's Maho Shonen. And it's silly, it's ridiculous, but the comedic timing is actually pretty good. It knows how ridiculous it is and plays it up. And it's actually just a really good parody of the magical girl genre. I thoroughly enjoyed it against my best against my best interest. So let's move on to number 2 with Etotama.
I've heard of this one. I've actually heard of it.
Etotama was, I think it was, you know, fairly well received, but it still deserves another nod. Basically, this guy...
Wait.
What?
This is basically Fruit Baskets, but...
With fighting.
With
fighting. And a girl you want to punch in the throat.
It's basically Fruits Basket in that there are characters who embody members of the Chinese Zodiac. Only in this case, they're all cute girls, and they all engage in a fighting tournament. And it's got some pretty good comedy. Chris hates Nyatan, who's the, you know, cat girl.
As he should.
I kind of like her. I think she's cute. But what's really impressive about this show is just how well it handles CG. All the fighting sequences are done in CG, and there's a very good transition from 2D to CG. And the CG feels very fluid, not at all out of place. And, like, I think it actually looks really nice. So if you want to see CG done well and are in the mood for just a fun, cute comedy romp with a lot of cute girls that isn't actually really a harem, it just has a lot of cute girls, then definitely check out Etotama.
I love harems. If you guys ever do an episode about harem shows, bring me back, because I'll talk about harem shows for hours.
We probably will.
We probably will. And the number 1 underrated show I'm going to put on the list... I'm happy that it has as much traction as it does, because I thought it was going to be completely overlooked. I feel like a lot of people overlooked it, you know, as they were watching, as they were keeping an eye on, you know, the seasonal charts.
You're talking about One Punch Man, right?
No, I'm talking about the show that's currently being overshadowed by One Punch Man, even though I think this one is better. And it is...
Well, that's Mobile Suit Gundam Iron Blooded Orphans.
We're talking.
I think he's talking about One Punch Man.
I am talking about Osomatsu-san. It's a sequel, actually, to a very old show. I forgot to write down the year. I should have done that. But it was, you know, like back when stuff was in black and white, and it's about these sextuplets who, at this point in their life, are basically listless neets. And it's got absolutely fantastic comedy. Sometimes it gets serious, and it does that really well. And the animation is pretty good, I think. At least the art style, I guess. It's something that's pretty unique. And it's something where, like, in the first episode, they make all these jokes about how, oh, we're this old show, we're so outdated, how are we going to make it into the modern era?
But it, and honestly, you could have made a series out of that one statement alone.
Yeah. It transitions very well, surprisingly. It's a very good show, and it's, like, it doesn't feel dated at all. I don't know, maybe, like, some of the old gags, you can write those off as character gags. And I think a lot of them kind of are character gags. But, you know, I think that this is actually my anime of the year over, you know, some stuff that might be better. And for that, like, I put it as my anime of the year because just what it means for a show like that old to be able to come back just so strong and in such full force, it's really admirable and heartwarming. And it is... it's just a fantastic show. Check it out. If you haven't checked it out, check it out.
And that was Bugman's review of One Punch Man.
Oh.
He says is the anime of the year.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was talking about this entire time, actually. I somehow accidentally wrote down Osamatsu-san. I don't know what the hell that show is.
Yeah, sounds dumb.
So our final segment is going to be something I'd like to... make a recurring segment that I am calling the 30-second review, where basically we have 30 seconds to sum up a show and explain why it's worth or not worth watching. So do you guys mind if I go first?
Sure.
I don't care.
All right. Well, since we talked about Fooly Cooly in this episode, and since I just finished watching it, I think we'll start with that. So I'm keeping an eye on the time. And, watching Fooly Cooly is a lot like having sex. Your first time, it's going to be a wild and confusing experience. Maybe it'll be good, maybe it won't be so great, but it's going to be overwhelming and intense. But when you watch it again, you start to pick up on a few more things, you're not as in over your head as much, and it's a much more enjoyable experience. Also, whether or not you've seen it doesn't really say that much about you as a person, but let's be honest, if you haven't seen it, some people are going to judge you anyway. That's my review of Fooly Cooly.
Hey, that was pretty good, but never had sex, have you?
Shut up.
It's pretty obvious from your comparison of the two.
You've never had sex.
Three times.
So who wants to go next?
All right, so my 30 seconds or less or your anime is pirated review goes to Nobunaga the Fool. What happens when someone finds your fanfic of a romance between Oda Nobunaga and Joan of Arc mixed in with giant robots and other historical figures fighting for supremacy? And then pitches that before satellites have it greenlit for an anime? Nobunaga the Fool is what happens. Visually, it's okay, and it has a phenomenal soundtrack. It starts out strong, but like so many anime nowadays, it chokes midway. But hey, if you like making historical figures turn in their grave, then go ahead and give it a watch.
Good. Wow. Good.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Nothing I can immediately make jokes about, so...
Speaking of jokes, I hear that you have one as well, Crimson.
Yeah, I've got one of these review things, you know.
Alright.
However, instead of a show, I did a manga, because I read a lot more right now than I watch. And the manga I did is... And I'm probably going to pronounce it wrong, but I'll say the English title, too. It's Umebe no Onanauko, which I believe English title is The Girl by the Sea. And in 30 seconds or less, or slightly more, here's my review. I've read enough Oyasumi Punpun to know that I should probably read the rest of it, and instead, I read this. I can't decide if Umebe no Ona no Ko is a cautionary tale about casual sex or a cautionary tale about breathing. If you like good, wholesome relationships or whatever the fuck is happening in Nisekoi, I suggest you stay far away from this manga because it shows teenagers as they usually are. Clueless morons who don't have the slightest clue what love is, so they settle for cigarettes and asshole fingering. Life sucks, man, and if you thought Inioue Asano would tell you any different, you're living in a fantasy world. It's good.
All right. I just have one question.
Yeah.
Why is Pun Pun a bird?
You know, that's the thing, man. I read a bunch of it, and I couldn't get over the fact that he was a bird. But I don't know the answer.
All right, that just about wraps things up for today. So once again, I've been Buggy. You can find me at TheLadybugMan on Twitter. That's at DALadybugMan.
I am Chris. You can find me on Twitter at TheRaggedyMan.
And Crimson, do you have some place that the people can find you?
Yeah, there's indicators indicating that there will be indications on the indicator soon regarding a place where maybe I'll do some stuff about entertainment. Because, you know, I can write better than a lot of people, so I should start writing things about things that matter.
So until next time, I'm Buggy, reminding you to always wear a condom when you watch Fooly Cooly.
I'm Chris, and I will continue to discover conspiracy theories regarding anime.
And I'm Douglas, and they didn't tell me I needed to have a joke ready for this part, so that's all I got.
We're blaming you if the podcast completely flops because of this now.
And I don't give a shit.
All right. Until next time. Until next time.
Yeah.
Is that the sign-off?
We'll workshop it.
Oh. All right, whatever, man.
What are you smoking?
That's not what we're talking about, is it?
No.
God damn it! 10 pages of writing just down the drain!
Oh, I'm sorry.
Alright, so...
You can talk about that if you want.
I was going for a joke!
So, Crimson...
No, now you acknowledge the joke.
I'm trying to move the podcast along here, and
that's
you
not
guys
how
are joking at you. Fine, god damn it, I'm done. I quit. Fuck it.
Wow. All right. See you all next month.
That Smash Mouth ruined the podcast.
Is he gone?
I think so.
All right. Hello, everyone. This is the Chris and Douglas Show. How y'all Woo-hoo! Doing?